Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Adobia. Between 2016 and 2018, Adobia sought medical attention three times for symptoms relating to breast cancer and each time was told not to worry. It was only on the fourth occasion when she insisted on a scan that her cancer was discovered. We'll be speaking about how factors such as age and race can have an impact on how patients are treated when seeking help. Adobia, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
You've shared your story with us before on sort of through blogs and stuff, but for our listeners, would you mind giving a little background to your story? As I kind of alluded to there, you had difficulty getting diagnosed.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much sort of covered the majority of the story, but yeah, in 2016, I found like a grape size sort of lump in my breast. I wasn't immediately concerned because I like to swim a lot. So I thought I had just developed some kind of weird muscle in my breast tissue. It was very, it wasn't something I was really concerned about. But I'm a bit of a worrywart anyway. So I decided to go to my GP and just query it just to make sure that, you know, everything was okay. My GP examined me and told me that there was nothing to worry about and sent me on my merry way. And that was in 2016, towards the end of the year. And then 2017, I started to realize that the lump was getting bigger. And as much as I was kind of ignoring it, it was always sort of, I always was brushing against it or knocking it and realizing, oh, there's something weird in my breast. Went to the GP and checked again. I was examined again by a different doctor this time. And again, was told that I shouldn't worry. It feels like a regular breast lump. And again, sent off. It was only in April of 2018 that I was in a lot of extreme pain that I went to the hospital complaining of chest pain. Even then, they didn't pick up that there was something abnormal going on in my breast and told me that I had musculoskeletal pain and gave me Cocodamol and told me to go home. It was only after I realised that the Cocodamol was not helping with the pain that I actually called an ambulance, went into A&E and insisted that they give me some sort of MRI or CT scan. Like, I really pushed for them to do that. And then when they did do that, they then discovered, obviously, that I had a huge mass in my breast and also a mass in my, like, stuff in my armpit as well. So it was after that, then they kind of took what was happening to me seriously. And yeah, the rest is history, as they say.
I mean, it's kind of cheery at the end there, but obviously that was awful to go to.
Terrible.
And it astounds me. Well, maybe it shouldn't, because I know we've heard lots of stories about this before, but even at that point where you're in so much pain that you were in an ambulance and you still had to kind of insist for there to be more done. And the sort of the second time you went to the doctor, even when you went to the hospital, were they aware at all that you'd previously been speaking to people about this lump that you'd found?
Yeah, I had made mention that I've been to my GP, and, you know, but because the GP has said to me, because you trust your sort of the professionals, the doctors. So because he said to me that it wasn't anything to worry about, it was a regular breast lump, I didn't think it was anything too serious at all. I did make mention to the paramedic that, oh yeah, I've got this lump in my breast. I think that might be what's causing the pain. Maybe it's lying on a nerve or something. But no, it wasn't taken seriously in the beginning until I insisted that I needed a scan. And that's the disturbing part about it all, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You're still young now, but you were relatively young as well when you first sought help. Do you think age had quite a big impact then on them not really considering that it could be something other than just sort of what was described as a normal breast lump?
100%. I think I was sort of dismissed because I was young. I want to say at the time, I must have been, the first time, I must have been, what, 28, 29 years old? And it was just kind of, it wasn't even, I don't think it was even a conversation. It could be anything other than a breast lump or, you know, because I've had a child, maybe it's a swollen milk duct or something. It wasn't considered anything sinister because of my age. And I think that did play a part in me sort of being dismissed in the beginning.
Mm. And again, something that I've definitely heard before. And I think especially with younger women as well, you may not feel you have the sort of autonomy in those situations to push back as much and as you know, if you were in an older, considered more at risk category, to actually say, you know, I would quite like to get this checked.
I 100% agree. Like I say, at that age, you kind of trust the healthcare professionals. You know, if a doctor's examined me, obviously he's done the training for however many years, 7, 8 years, I'm not too sure how long the training is, but they've done the training, they've got the qualification. So they are the ones who are in the position to tell me what's wrong and what's, you know, what's going on. And if they tell you there's nothing wrong, then who am I to argue that? I don't have a medical background. I'm not a medical professional. So if I've gone to see my GP, I trust that he's going to, you want to trust that he's going to, or she's going to sort of give you the correct information. But unfortunately, that wasn't true. It was, you know, I wasn't taken care of well. And unfortunately, because it took so long for it to be picked up on, I'm now a secondary case. Had I had my concerns in the beginning been picked up on, I would have been a primary and probably had a better sort of outlook, as in like my prognosis would have been a better one.
Mm. And it's something we definitely just take for granted that professionals are going to look out for us. And I mean, as well as age, and this might be harder to say sort of in your specific case, but maybe if we think more generally, maybe not just with breast cancer specifically either, maybe just with healthcare in general, but do you think that being a Black woman makes it harder to access appropriate healthcare?
I do, yes. I think that, I mean, I can only speak for myself as a Black woman, but I feel that my pain is sort of ignored. I don't know if there's this stigma around like Black people being able to tolerate high levels of pain. So if I'm saying that I'm in pain, especially when I was having the chest pains initially before I had the scan, I don't even feel that that was even taken as seriously as it should have been. Mm-hmm. Because there's this perception out there that we have a really high threshold for pain, which isn't true. And a lot of us as well, Black women, I could say, sometimes we don't complain as much as we should about pain and, you know, being uncomfortable. We kind of just push through a lot of things. I mean, I know I've always been that way. Kind of if I'm in agony, I kind of was like, oh, I'll just take some painkillers and just get on with it. When really and truly, you know, I should be, I mean, I do so now, but before then, I wouldn't pay too much attention to if I'm in pain or agony or if I'm, you know, I need a rest, really. I was just kind of, I think we have that in our community a lot of Black women just kind of, we just push through things and we don't listen to our bodies sometimes and take the rest that we need. I also, in regards to like race and sort of looking at how I was treated with the GP, I feel like if the GP had seen what breast cancer symptoms had looked like on like darker skin, because I've got very dark skin, and on my breast, my breast was darker in shade, and it looked a bit like hyperpigmentation, so it could easily be missed. Yeah. But I feel like if there's sort of more imaging in, you know, medical journals and, you know, stuff that they used to study, and the kind of difference between sort of looking at breast cancer on a darker skin person versus a lighter skin or white or Asian, perhaps, you know, he may have been able to pick up on it a bit sooner. So I think race does sometimes have a part to play in it. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, sort of doom and gloom, like race is like the reason why, but I think it does play a part of it. Yeah, definitely.
You covered so many excellent things there. Just to kind of touch on a few of them. I mean, I know with the just knowing what breast cancer might present as on different skin tones, that's something that even Breast Cancer Now very recently has kind of tried to address in producing different infographics of how things might present differently. Because it's not just medical professionals, it's also doing a disservice to people who don't have white skin tones, that when they look at that image and they might think, well, I don't know how that translates to darker skin.
Mm.
And certainly the thing about pain thresholds, I've heard that before. And I think it comes from this like horrible pervasive myth that just used to be used to justify racism and awful things that you would do to enslaved people who more often than not were black. And it's just sort of awfully trickled down and is still around today. But it might not be something that we're comfortable enough to talk about directly, especially to healthcare professionals, and to actually say, like, by the way, this isn't true. But not being a healthcare professional myself, I don't know if those conversations are being had, or how they could be facilitated. But I mean, that kind of leads us into thinking about, you know, is there anything that you think might be able to help combat this inequality, not just with black people experiencing inequalities in healthcare, but also young women, particularly with breast cancer?
I mean, I think like conversations like this, we need more exposure. These conversations need to be had. I think definitely, you know, education in the education system. I'm shocked to hear that, you know, in secondary school, sometimes they don't even talk about, you know, what could happen if you get cancer. It's all based on sort of sex education and more so what happens to boys, but there's not a lot of talk of what happens to the female body. And I definitely think that, you know, talking about breast cancer and all types of cancers, but for myself, breast cancer, to be discussed in schools is really important. I mean, I know they're slowly adding stuff. I mean, I know that they do sometimes have talks about cervical cancer and stuff like that, but I mean, I wish that I kind of knew more about it instead of it happening to me and then having to do the research. And it was difficult for me to even find information on what breast cancer would look like on black skin. I mean, that was a struggle. I can attest to what you just mentioned before. That was a struggle for me because even when I was trying to, and we all do this, you know, if you've got symptoms at home, you go on Google and you start looking up your symptoms.
Yeah, Dr. Google. Yeah.
So I'm there looking at what does breast cancer look like on breast, and I'm looking dark skin and I can't find anything. All I'm getting is sort of dimpling and all, you know, the usual stuff that they say, but I'm thinking, okay, well, my breast doesn't look like it's dimpled. My breast is this shade, and it, you know, it doesn't, you know, on breast cancer on white skin probably present, you know, either like a darker brown or a red, whereas on me it's really like a deep purpley black. And that I couldn't find any images like that. So I couldn't even if I wanted to self-diagnose myself, I wasn't able to even do that. So just having the information out there and having these conversations and there being a space and a platform for people to openly discuss that, I think would definitely help, you know, put the information out there.
And you yourself are kind of putting the information out there in your own way. I know you, you've already mentioned like having this conversation is a huge part of that. But you've got your own YouTube channel and you recently took part in our Fashion Targets breast cancer campaign, which you were brilliant on the day, by the way. I could see you having
so
a lot of
fun.
And I know like obviously your channel and your Instagram is more, it's about fashion, isn't it? It's kind of your involvement in that world, but you have occasionally shared a little bit about your breast cancer story as well. Was there sort of the impetus behind that was to actually start talking about it more amongst younger women, amongst like communities that might not have as much representation?
I mean, I've always wanted to have that discussion, but I wanted it to be not something that was like doom and gloom and negative. Yes, cancer's awful, it's terrible, but there are people like myself who I'm living with the disease and, you know, most of the time I'm relatively happy, as in like, you know, I smile, I'm happy, I get on with, you know, get on my day to day and I'm quite positive. And I wanted to sort of bring that element to it when I was having the conversation in regards to myself. I felt that that was really important because, you know, yes, cancer takes people's lives. We know that. And it's a horrible disease to have to live with. But like I said, you know, there are treatments out there that are keeping people alive much longer. And those things as well should be celebrated and, you know, positive, the positive outlook on, you know, research that's developing as well is also something that should be discussed and celebrated as well. So that's, for me, when I decided to talk about it on my channel, my platform, my small platform, it was always in a positive light, as well as telling my story, which was sad. I did also want to say, look, you know, I'm still here and I'm still living and I'm still enjoying all the stuff that I used to enjoy previously, like, you know, dressing up and being part of the amazing, you know, Breast Cancer Now Fashion Targets Breast Cancer campaign. That was so much fun and it was a brilliant, amazing day. And yes, it was, you know, to bring awareness for cancer, breast cancer, but it was also so much fun. We all enjoyed ourselves. So I think that's my sort of angle and what I want to sort of put out there when I'm talking about breast cancer and how, you know, it affects me and my life. I want there to be a little bit of positivity there, even though it is, you know, such a horrible thing. I think there's enough out there about how terrible cancer is. Mm. We should be talking about people that are living with it, people that have, you know, survived the disease and they're carrying on and they've got to their, you know, 5 years and they've, you know, remission. Now we need to be discussing about those things and talking about how amazing people's journeys have been, you know, and they're still here with us.
Yeah, I completely agree. And your positivity definitely kind of radiates, not just in this conversation, but as I say, on your platforms, on your social media. And have you found in doing that you've been able to reach other people? Have you been able to kind of have those kind of conversations?
Yeah, for me personally, I kind of just do it and that's my story and, you know, I want to put it out there, but I don't ever expect anyone to like reach out to me or get in contact with me. And it's amazing how many amazing women have been in contact with me and said, oh my gosh, like your story's really inspired me. I also have stage 4 and I just thought that was the end of it, but you've just sort of shown me that no, it's not, and you look like you're having so much fun. And I'm like, yes, like this is what I wanted to do. So yeah, you know, I always get surprised when I get a DM from someone saying, oh, I saw your video and it really was inspiring. I'm like, oh, I'm so happy that it inspired you, you know, because that's all I want to do, really, just to put a smile on people's face and know, like, you know what, yeah, this horrible thing's happening to you, but it's not the end of the world. And it's, you can with strength and positive mindset kind of get through it, you know? Mm. I know that's not the case for every single person, but there are more and more of us who that is the case for. So I'm just glad I could reach those people and just kind of give them some encouragement in their low moments.
Mm, yeah. Well, that's really lovely to hear. It's funny because we started this conversation kind of talking about barriers to accessing treatment. Mm. And I expected most of this conversation to be more on the negative side, but I really like how we've sort of like come through that, and it's actually these positive points that you're making now that are really shining through here. And I just hope that we can one day have those positive conversations about access to healthcare as well,
yes,
and how those things are progressing in leaps and bounds, as well as, like you mentioned, research.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think giving, like I say, because it's such a strong topic, and a lot of people feel uncomfortable sometimes having those candid conversations, which I agree with you, they're definitely needed. So like having a space where, you know, it's kind of easygoing as such, just to ease people into having those conversations, I think really helps. I'm not going to be deluded and thinking like everything is going to be positive and happy all the time, but I feel like creating that space whereby we're not going to have some deep conversation where you're going to be feeling like rubbish afterwards. We're just going to be talking about things that need to be discussed, you know, is good. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, for me, I'm happy to talk about, you know, the barriers to entry, because that's a real thing. And those things need to be talked about. But I also want to sort of dial back to the good things also that are happening and we're moving forward in a positive way.
Yeah, I'm really pleased you have as well, because this has been such a lovely conversation.
I'm just happy that things like this exist. I think giving people like me a voice and being able to share my story is so important. And, you know, more and more people sort of sometimes need to hear that. So I just appreciate you guys and just being able to provide this opportunity for me to kind of come and speak to you. I really appreciate that. I think it's amazing. Brilliant organization. Like every single person I've met has been so amazing. They're so lovely. Like, you know, I really enjoy doing these things with you guys. It's really, really good, great and fun. I really enjoy it.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. I wish I could take the credit, but absolutely can't. and I mean, obviously we mentioned that you were involved in Fashion Targets Breast Cancer and people will be able to see you, and that you're sporting a lovely pink coat in some of the pictures. But if people wanted to find you on your YouTube channel or Instagram, whereabouts can they do that?
So it's the same handle all across. So it's Divine Style. That's on YouTube and on Instagram. And yeah, that's pretty much where you can find me. Send me a DM if you're, you know, want to have a chat. I'm always open to talk about anything, whether it be breast cancer or even fashion. Listen, I'm open to it all.
Yeah, I may have to DM you about the fashion because, yeah, clearly you know things I don't.
I try.
Well, it's been really brilliant talking to you, Adobe, and thank you so much for just making this a really positive conversation.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.